This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for all readers who want to know the story behind a book. My name is Patsy Gill. My guest today is Luke Reynolds, whose book, Looney Experiment, will be released on August 4th. It is available for pre-order on Amazon. Hi, Luke. Are you there?
Hey, yes, Patsy. Nice to see you. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. Well, it must be exciting for you knowing that your book is coming out soon.
Yeah, very, very exciting. And it's I feel like in the publishing world, it always takes so long from conception to actualization. But it's very thrilling to see that we're almost here. Yes.
Well, a little background on you. I'm talking to you during summer break because you are a real, absolutely true teacher, seventh grade teacher, right? Full time?
Yes. Yep. I teach seventh grade English full time in the public school system just outside of Boston, Massachusetts.
And so, as a full time teacher, you've put a lot of your knowledge into this into this book. Let's first talk about the book, and then there's so many things I want to talk to you about because your whole attitude toward writing and toward teaching are something that I find so fascinating. Now, Looney Experiment is—I'll let you explain it, but it is I think it's a fantastic book. I really feel sort of humble in front of you because I always think that it is such a talent to write not a large book. Sometimes you can write a very long book. You know, you can just keep writing and write, but to write a small, because it's not a very large book, but that is so clear and so brilliant, you have done an amazing job. And I really cannot recommend this more highly because it's not, I know they're marketing it for young adults and because it is a story of a schoolboy, it is marketed. But I really think every parent should read this book because you have some universal truths in there that everyone should know about. So first, you tell us a little bit about Looney Experiment and the two characters that you've developed.
Oh, thank you. First, I really appreciate your kind words. That means a lot. So the Looney Experiment, it's a story of an eighth grader named Atticus Hobart. He goes to a public school in Windsor, Connecticut, and he's just incredibly shy. He's terrified to speak. And like a lot of my students are, and like I was in middle school and high school, Atticus is anytime the teacher asks him to speak, to use his voice, he just goes into this imaginary world, and he imagines what it would be like, and he often does this when reality feels so scary to Atticus. He creates this imaginary place of what he wishes life could be like, and of course, he always snaps back to reality because the things he wants in his heart and soul, they don't happen for him, and he snaps back, and life is very hard for him. His parents are separating, and he's taunted by a bully named Danny Wills, who calls him Atticus Staticus. And like all of us, Atticus just has his obstacles that he's got to battle. And into this sort of life, this really crazy, zany teacher named Mr. Looney, who's from the Roman times. This guy is just incredibly old. It comes in as the long-term substitute English teacher for Atticus's eighth grade English class, as his regular teacher goes on maternity leave. And Mr. Looney's methods of teaching are just totally the opposite of what Atticus has seen. There's no tradition here. There's no adherence to the norms, to the common core and the basic principles. But instead, Mr. Looney's after something way deeper. And Mr. Looney concocts these crazy activities in class designed to get kids like Atticus to come to the surface, to let who they really are shine on the surface. And it's through the relationship between Atticus and Mr. Looney that Atticus begins to learn what courage really is, that it's not about this huge, glorious moment of triumph, but it's about learning to use your voice and learning to be honest and let all that you are, the imperfections, the perfections, the mess-ups, the mistakes, the failures, the joys, all of that, let that come up for people to see. But that's what courage entails. And so it's really the story of their relationship, of school being done really differently, and hopefully it makes us laugh a little bit along the way.
Well, it makes us laugh, and I can tell you it's one of the few books I read a great deal, many, many books, but it is one of the rare books that in recent years has made me actually cry. And, you know, I read it twice. I read it once before Ghost Said a Watchman, and then I read it at 5 o'clock one morning afterwards. And we'll talk in a little while why Ghost Said a Watchman by Harper Lee is relevant to the book. But I just found myself in tears because it is, you have really done a brilliant job with, you know, I understand that Mr. Looney is based on an actual teacher you had. Is that true?
Yeah, this is true. So Mr. Looney is, and of course I asked permission if I could use his name, but Mr. Robert Looney is a real person, not in the novel. You know, he's very much changed his age, but he was based on my fifth grade teacher, Mr. Robert Looney, who I'll never forget when my peers, other fifth graders and I walked into his class. He stood on a desk, it is a true story, stood on a desk and held up the spelling textbook that our school used. And we were very familiar with this line of spelling textbooks that, you know, drudgery and bored us. And we all hated it. And he held up the book and he said, you know, welcome to fifth grade. You're all familiar with this book. And we all said, yeah. And he just chucked it into the garbage right in front of us. And he said, we won't be using that this year. And we all kind of looked up like, whoa, is that legal? Are they going to come and take him away? But Mr. Looney was just this incredibly inspiring, beautiful, kind man who cared about writing. He developed his own program called Flair, and he asked us as students to write what we were most passionate about, to write about our confusions, our struggles. You know, and I think sometimes in school and as writers, we feel like we can only write what we actually have clarity about. We need to write about what we're certain about, the things we figured out. And Mr. Looney totally disagreed with that notion. He said, you know, you write stories to figure out what you think about things and to process your emotions, your struggles, your joys, your pain. And so he encouraged us to just write about anything, write about goofy aliens, write about deep, dark family secrets. And so that year we just wrote our hearts out. And he was just an incredibly inspiring man and to this day, we still keep in touch. We talk on the phone, we email. Actually, just before I got, you know, we started our talk today, I just sent him another little note to see how he's doing and try to plan to get together. But he's just a wonderful man, and I dedicated the Looney Experiment to him. And
he must be very excited. You know, having a great teacher is so important. And just recently, I interviewed the new poet laureate, Juan Herrera. And I'm going to be airing that interview in September when he takes up his new post as the poet laureate. And he was telling me about his third grade teacher, who was an inspiration to him more than 50 years ago. And it's so wonderful that she has lived long enough. She's now, I think, 95, 96, to see that he has been named the poet laureate of the United States. So you can imagine how thrilling that is for her as a teacher, and of course thrilling for him that he has her, you know, he has shown her what a great teacher she was. And you're lucky with your Mr. Looney, and I have a feeling your students are pretty lucky with you, because you know, this, I think you have, you know, the right attitude. It's so difficult nowadays in schools with all of the required testing and required this and required that, to have this sort of spontaneity and this joy of learning. And as you know, the name of my program is Joy on Paper, and the joy of writing is so important.
Yeah.
So Are you the most popular teacher in the school?
I don't know.
I bet you are.
There's a lot of amazing teachers, but I love my students, and I love the fact that my job is to work on writing with them and reading and talk about great characters and talk about real life, that real life isn't always perfect and it doesn't always work out, and that it takes multiple revisions each time to create the stories we want to create, both on paper and in our own lives.
Well, you know, the Looney experiment is, I think it's very, it's perfectly written. I mean, really, really fine writing. And I know that you're published by Zondervan, and they have an excellent background in choosing great writers. But they've done a good job with you, because it's important that what you've done is you've created a real world in that little book, and touched on so many elements that I think young people will relate to. But as I said, I think parents should also read it so they can see what it is for a child to be bullied, to really understand. You know, they're always doing books about bullying and do this and do this. But with your book, it comes so naturally, the full understanding of the impact of bullying, and I think you've done just a marvelous job on that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And it was an aspect I really wanted to get into the book in a way that I hoped would be authentic, because as a teacher, you see kids who are really struggling and with bullying, and it takes so many forms. Sometimes it's just emotional. Sometimes it's online. Sometimes it's very physical. And with Atticus, I wanted to try to give voice to the concerns that students deal with and grapple with every day, and things from my own life that I had gone through. And so I hope that it comes across as powerful and real, and hope that it gives students and parents hope that there are ways to navigate it.
Well, I'm sure that, when your students come back, that you have a new group of students coming in the fall, they'll all be thrilled to read your book. Now, I have to take a little break, but I want to, when we come back, I want to talk about Atticus, the two Atticuses in your life, okay?
That'd be great, yeah.
Okay, one Thanks, moment. Nancy. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Love a good book? Come out to Orlando for the Indie Book Fest 2015. Hang out with over 60 best-selling authors at Fanfare, where you can chat, take selfies, and get autographs. Enjoy the fun theme parties. Join us July 31st to August 2nd at the beautiful Caribe Royale Hotel in Orlando. To buy tickets, go to www.indiebookfest.com. Find your own story at the Indie Book Fest 2015.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Have you been struggling with family conflict, depression, or trauma? Has something been keeping you up at night, causing excessive stress and worry? Tune in to Moments of Clarity every Wednesday night at 8. After over 10 years as a psychotherapist, I realized how important it is to take the stigma out of seeking professional help. So tune in Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. The call to me can be a great first step. It may just be exactly what you need to hear.
If you're in the market for your next car, then the place to shop is AutoShopper.com. You'll have access to hundreds of dealers right here in the area, and you can search over millions of cars nationwide on AutoShopper.com. AutoShopper.com is in hundreds of locations in the Tampa Bay area. Find your next car by taking advantage of all the power and reputation of AutoShopper.com. From your desktop, you can read car reviews, automotive news, calculate payments, use our tools to research, and get a Carfax vehicle history report at AutoShopper.com. This is the public application to pick up and read when you're looking to purchase your next car. Log on to AutoShopper.com and search for your special vehicle. And if you want to sell your vehicle, then advertise it in AutoShopper.com magazine. The readers can view a picture of your car and call you directly. It's all happening at AutoShopper.com, your auto buying and selling source. Pick up the magazine today or log on to AutoShopper.com, the premier source for car buying or selling. AutoShopper.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back with my guest, Luke Reynolds, whose book, Loony Experiment, will be released on August 4th. Hi, Luke.
Hey, Patsy.
Okay. You know, on your webpage, I noticed that you write about intersections, parenting, teaching, writing, faith, and social justice. So I know that all of these things are important to you, and no doubt one of the things that has been important in your life has been Atticus Finch, the main character of To Kill a Mockingbird. So your character, of course, Atticus Hobart is based on that name and the story of his mother believing that she would have a son who would be courageous. And courage is so important to the entire your book and of course To Kill a Mockingbird. So it must be with very mixed feelings that you have come out at the same time or just a month or so after Ghost Set a Watchman, Harper Lee's long and forgotten and book, which I, you know, it's difficult to say what you know, anything about this book.
You know, and I promised myself when the book came out, I said, you know what, I'm gonna wait a little while to read it. I want to just linger with the old Atticus a little bit. And then one day I was driving home and I found myself just turning into our indie bookstore, our local bookstore, and I couldn't wait. So I bought a copy and read it, just raced through Ghost Set a Watchman. And of course, Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird was a hero for me. As a young man, a reader, and in the book for Loony Experiment for Atticus Hobart, he is, as you mentioned, his mother gives him that name, hoping that he'll live up to some of that courage. So when I read Ghost at a Watchman, I felt two things, you know, incredible shock and how could this be the same Atticus? But by the time I was finished, I felt a sense of gratitude and not for, I think, the actual premise of Ghost at a Watchman. Not the idea that, oh, Atticus is human, and I didn't feel like that gelled with me. But what I felt gratitude for was the notion of revision, and all the reading I've done about Ghost in a Watchman, you know, I just have an incredible gratitude to Tay Hohoff, Harper Lee's editor, and the idea that Ghost in a Watchman is most likely a first draft of To Kill a Mockingbird. If anything, it shows me that in Ghost in a Watchman, we meet a scout, we meet Atticus, and these are two really interesting characters. But like in life, and like I tell my seventh grade students all the time, you know, we don't get it right on the first draft. Life is about revision. None of us, you know, meet an obstacle or meet a challenge and we just do it perfectly. And with writing, my students always want to sit down and think, I want to write the perfect essay, Mr. Reynolds. I want to write an amazing story. I want to get an A+. And I say, none of us do it. Myself, no, you know, even the most amazing novelist, no one sits down and gets it right the first time. We have to work. We have to revise again and again. And so I came away from Ghost at a Watchman with that idea that there's a nugget in there of beauty and truth. But I think it took the editor, Tay Hohoff, and a lot of, from all accounts, years of work on Harper Lee's part with her editor to slowly bring that to the point of To Kill a Mockingbird, where we have the Atticus Finch we end up with. So that's sort of I'm constantly in flux about this. Every day I have a new idea and thought about Ghost in a Watchman, but today I have that sense of gratitude that the Atticus Finch in Ghost in a Watchman is a first draft, and he needs revision, and it's through multiple attempts, multiple revisions that we get closer to what we really are supposed to be and what we really could be.
And I have a feeling we get closer to the heart of Te Hohoff, because I recently spoke to Saul Bellow's editor, Bina Kamlani, and she had worked with him closely. And I have a feeling that some of the work done at the end there, also, you know, her influence was very important. And I think in Te Hohoff, you know, people don't often talk about editors, in this case, I think she's an important element to the story. Now, your Atticus Hobart is a teenager who's going through all of these things. And one of the things, of course, is what you mentioned, that he imagines things. And I know that I'm not a teenager, but I'm always imagining these scenarios in my head, how I would like things to work out, how I would do things. And I must say that in my mind, I have seen myself finding the dusty manuscript of Go Set a Watchman. And in my mind, I take that manuscript and I think to myself, oh, I could make $1 zillion. Or, oh, I could burn this thing.
Yeah.
And in my mind, in my imagination, that wonderful thing where I can do whatever I want, I take that manuscript and I throw it in the fire and I say goodbye. I don't care. I don't care if it's a lesson in how, you know, how to develop a book, or I don't care. I would like it gone, because I'm afraid. Yeah. I'm afraid that rule, you know, people will get maybe too, I don't know if it's the right thing is to say PC, but if it gets too large, because I don't want people, and I don't want young people to miss that, you know, there's always this required reading in school, and some of it is just horrible. I often did not read the required reading books, because some of them, I don't know what they are today, but what did we have to read in my day, like Tessa de Uberville's and horrible books that you think, my gosh, what did they do to us? So, you know, at the time, To Kill a Mockingbird wasn't a required, it was actually an optional read when I was in school. And of course, I always took that because, you know, it meant something. It really touches a chord that I hope that, future generations of kids don't miss, because it's an important book. And, you, as you did, there's so many writers have based some or all of their book on this book, on To Kill a Mockingbird. Yeah. So, yeah. And you've done a beautiful job. You've taken the elements, the quotes about courage and all of this, really. And of course, your Mr. Looney is a fantastic teacher, teacher. And I wish that everybody could have at least one great teacher in their life, because it really makes a difference. And you know, I know that nowadays when I was in school, we didn't have all of these tests that they have nowadays. So are you finding yourself in a difficult position, always having to think about the tests that your students are having, or do you just forget it and let's just learn to read, let's learn to write?
It's a great question. You know, it feels like it's a constant tension, and my heart really breaks for the kids, because they, earlier and earlier now, the students will come in and they have this notion of, we're going to be tested and we need to prove that we know these things. And, I've been reading a lot of educational research that says, you know, the ability to prove on a test bubble or in a very timed way, you know, 45 minutes, prove that you can write and do it this way, that's actually not a very authentic assessment. It's not a great way to test what we know. But better ways to test where you now are, can we show it over a period of time? Can we show growth and can we show a deeper sense of learning? But in a culture where we're very much after the numbers, we want to prove what was your score? Did you raise your score? It's a very quick culture driven by statistics. Kids don't always have the chance to show their intelligence. And my heart especially breaks for the kids who are deeply, deeply intelligent, very thoughtful kids, sometimes my best writers, who can craft a poem. You know, this one kid this year brought up a poem to me, and very, very quiet student who often wouldn't speak in class. And but one day after class, she said, you know, Mr. Reynolds, would you mind reading a poem I wrote? And I said, sure. And, you know, that night I brought it home and read it, and it just blew me away. It floored me, the power of her language. Now, certainly there were commas misplaced. There were, you know, grammatical errors that if she had written that poem on a standardized test, I am sure it would have gotten a very low score, but they would have missed this incredible level of emotional intelligence and knowledge that was in that poem that I think a standardized test just can't pick up, no matter how good it is. It misses, and I think, and that's the real tragedy, that we want to teach kids not just that it's form, not just that it's correct comma placement, and I love, you know, the beauty of a comma well-placed and a semicolon well-used. But that if we're teaching kids that that's what life is about and that's what writing is about, I think we're failing them. And I think first and foremost, our job as teachers is to inspire students, to make them believe they have a voice, and the stories that they've lived and the ideas that they can bring forth in an essay, those need to be heard. And, you know, a lot of the new research coming out says that what we need most in the 21st century is creativity and problem solving. And in order to solve some of the problems we're facing, we don't need kids who can come out and ace a standardized test. We need kids who can come out of school emboldened and empowered to take risks, to make mistakes, to say, hey, I'm willing to flunk, but I'm going to learn from it. You know, I'm going to try it this way. And if this is a total flop, then this option of solving this problem or getting at this theme, it doesn't work, I'm willing to fail, and then I'll try something else. And I think instead, with all the standardization we see, we're encouraging kids to say, don't take risks, you know, do it once you can do it perfectly, because life's not about revision. You got to get it right the first time and get the right score to get into the right school and the right college and get the right job. And I think all of that really is quite a deadening message, and it doesn't do kids well, a good service, or our society. But I think I'm encouraged too, not to be too down. I see a lot of teachers and a lot of kids that are after a bigger idea, after a more heartening idea, to say, no, we think there's other ways to do school. And we think that, you know, acing a standardized test doesn't show our knowledge. And I see those teachers every day at the school where I work and connecting over email. I see a lot of teachers that are after something more. And that's incredibly inspiring. And so part of the reason I wrote Mr. Looney was to say, look, it can be done. You can have a teacher that's really passionate and really different, and you can still have students learn. Because I think sometimes people will see a teacher like that and say, "Well, they're not gonna learn grammar that way." And I think it's possible to do both. It doesn't have to be an either or.
Well, I love just that little lesson that you give there in where Atticus writes a love letter. You know, it's so clever how he writes it. And then how he goes back and revises it, and the just that alone, I think, is such a lesson for students to see how revisions work.
Yeah. That was probably one of my favorite parts of writing the book. And I tell my students when because I shared at the end, I sometimes don't like to talk about it because I don't want to make students or people feel like I'm talking about myself too much, but I did share with students about this novel being published, and they're like, you know, they're very excited. And I say to them very quickly, I say, guess how many drafts I wrote? And they're like, what? You know, how many? And I say, 13. And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, I rewrote this book 13 times. And at first, some were like, man, you must be a bad writer, Mr. Reynolds. And I say, no, that's what good writing is. All good writing is rewriting, that we go at it again and again and again. So one of my favorite parts is having Atticus Hobart in the novel rewrite his love letter because it was just so fun to watch him go through that process of he wants to tell Audrey how he feels, and he can't get it right the first time, and so he has to keep doing it. And I feel that, you know, in life, I feel that way so often that as a dad or as a teacher or as a husband or as, you know, in any role I'm in, I find myself saying something and doing something and thinking, okay, I didn't get it right that time. Let me do a revision. Let me try it. I want to try it again because I know it can be a little bit better. And I find that that's just an encouraging way for me to think. And I find that sometimes when students latch onto that, it kind of encourages them to say, oh, you mean I don't have to sit here and produce a perfect essay this time? I say, no, stay after. We'll work on it. And then the next draft is going to be a little better. And it kind of, you can almost watch their bodies relax a little bit, like, oh, so it's just about work. It's not about this innate ability that you should just be able to produce something perfect. And so I like that.
Well, no, when I read that section, then I went back and reread it, and I said, this is so beautifully written. And I hope that English teachers all over the country, if they don't do anything else, at least take that section and show it to the children. And because it's so clear, and it's at the end, you feel, whoa, this is really something terrific. I really think that it's going to be a great, your book's going to be a great success, because I think if teachers get this in their hands and parents get this in their hands, they're going to want more kids to read it and more teachers to read it, because it is exactly this. That's, I've been reading quite a bit of young adult, and I think this is so hopeful. You know, it gives such great hope, and I can see that there's a, you talk about faith and whatever, you know, and also social justice, that there's, your book is inspirational.
That's very kind of you. I really appreciate you saying that. And I feel like that's what inspired me in a novel, not a moral that's sort of didactic, but just seeing a character like Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird, or seeing a character that we say, they're not perfect. And even in To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, you know, he has his flaws. And if we look closely, we see them. There are flaws there. He's not perfect. But we see something that speaks to us, a part of us that says, maybe there's a part of me that touches that. And we grow. And, you know, there's one line in Ghost at a Watchman where Atticus says to Scout, you know, there's no such thing as a collective conscience. And I think that's one of the things that got revised out, because in To Kill a Mockingbird, Atticus Finch is all about collective conscience, that we touch each other, that we slowly, together, we build a collective conscience of what's right, what's okay, where do we draw the line as people and as learners and as civilians, where do we draw the line and say, this is not okay, we're not going to tolerate this injustice. And we do that collectively, and the more we hear each other's stories, I think we build that collective conscience. And I think that's a great reversal that we see from Ghost at a Watchman to Kill a Mockingbird, where we see the power of collective conscience. We see the power of people sharing stories and saying, no, I draw the line here, and I won't budge, and that's courage. But it's I think that even hopefully maybe touched on something of that in the novel, or having the chance to try feels really exciting.
I have to take a quick break, but can you hold on and stay on with me? Because I would like to talk to you about Imagine It Better, which you edited, and some other comments about your wonderful book, Looney Experiment. Okay, thanks.
Thanks.
Hold on. We'll be right back.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
Love a good book? Come out to Orlando for the Indie Book Fest 2015. Hang out with over 60 best-selling authors at Fanfare, where you can chat, take selfies, and get autographs. Enjoy the fun theme parties. Join us July 31st to August 2nd at the beautiful Caribe Royale Hotel in Orlando. To buy tickets, go to www.indiebookfest.com. Find your own story at the Indie Book Fest 2015.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
Some people don't believe in mermaids. Hope that's not you, because they exist at Wickiwatchee Springs State Park off US 19 and State Road 50, just north of Spring Hill. Since 1947, the magic of the mermaids have been entertaining visitors at the 538-acre Springs Park. Come and watch in the 400-seat submerged theater, The Little Mermaid Show at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. daily. Wickiwatchee State Park offers mermaid shows, reptile shows, boat tours, and swimming in the pristine spring at Buccaneer Bay. Wickiwatchee State Park is a perfect backdrop for wedding receptions, birthday parties, picnics, meetings, retreats, family reunions, or just to relax on the white sandy beach. Step back in time when things were much simpler and enjoyable. Spend the day at an original theme park. Call 352-592-5656 or log on to wickiwatchee.com for upcoming events, hours, and ticket pricing. Wickiwatchee Springs State Park, where mermaids do exist.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. And we're back with Luke Reynolds, whose book, Looney Experiment, is available on pre-order at Amazon. It's out on August 4th, and I highly recommend that you get this book for yourself, for any teenagers in your life. This is a great book. Hi, Luke.
Hi, Patsy.
Okay, you know, one of the joys of having a radio program, your own radio program, is that you can interview people you want to interview. You don't have to, you know, and you know what I got your book from Zondervan, and I read it, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is fantastic. And the wonderful thing is when you sent me an email recently, you signed it Peace. And as a someone from the flower child generation, when I used to sign everything Peace, Love, and Happiness, I really got a kick out of that. I thought, oh, that's good. Nobody's done that for years. So, but you're quite a bit younger, I think. You're still a young man. You have two young children, right?
Yes, a 6-year-old and a 1-year-old.
Oh, yeah, those are wonderful, wonderful ages. And my two boys also are 5 years apart, like that. And it's wonderful. You know, it's a nice spacing, because you've had time with the older one for his special years, and then you get the second one and you think, whoa, my joy is doubled, and the hectic nature of your life is doubled too, but it's wonderful. And enjoy them while they're young, because they grow up. It's so, the years go too fast, and my boys are off, and you know, and it's very hard. You know, I homeschooled. One of the reasons I homeschooled was because, well, I didn't know when I had been out of the country for many years, and when I came back and had my first child, I didn't know that I wasn't supposed to teach him to read. I didn't know that. And so, you know, I was reading to him, you know, as I read constantly. And of course I was reading to him from, you know, the time he could be in my lap. And so he just learned to read. And so by the time he was 5 years old, he's read all of the Hardy Boys. So yeah. it was a little difficult to send them to school. You know, they're doing the ABCs, and so you know, so it's a wonderful. I had a wonderful time homeschooling. And, of course, I had to get tutors at certain points, like when they got too smart for me, which I think they were around 7 years old when they started getting too smart for me in math. You know, I held out a little longer with literature and history, but I think at seven, when my oldest one was seven, I had to get him a teacher for algebra because that was the end of my, that was the end of my math days. But it's wonderful. One thing I, you know, having boys who have been reading all their lives, and they know the joy of reading, as I look at all the hundreds of books, we spent our time going to secondhand bookstores and buying books, and luckily we have all the old original Hardy Boys and all of this type of thing.
Wow!
So it's awesome. I think it's great. You know that. You of course you're encouraging your students to read, and we all owe a great deal of gratitude to the Harry Potter books that have brought a lot of kids to reading, and I think that your book will be something that they will love to read. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Helen Creswell books.
No, not actually.
Well, I think perhaps the greatest children's books are Helen Creswell, who wrote The Bagthorpes. And this is a British writer. So if you haven't read those books, you must read them because they are brilliantly written. And more on the... they're very funny. They're hilarious. Mm. They have perhaps less social impact of your book, but still, they are great reads, and again, books that will bring kids to reading, because that's the important thing. If we can get kids to read, I myself don't understand something, and perhaps as a teacher, because I don't deal with, you know, a lot, I haven't dealt with public schools or public school teachers. What I find so hard to fathom is when, like, they do these man-on-the-street interviews and they ask people, like, who was the first president of the United States? What year was the, you know, what, not year, like, what century, what was the American Revolution? And they're saying 1941 or 1942 or something. And I'm wondering, what's been going on in these schools?
Yeah. You know, and I think there is a lot of, I think, I mean, part of what I wonder about, and even as I work with my seventh graders, I wonder if sometimes students aren't getting the bigger picture, you know, and I think in each subject matter, especially with all the testing, it's interesting to see that, you know, the testing has gone way up, but a lot of things have gone down. General knowledge, a sense of the bigger picture, the bigger story of history, of literature, of... you know, even math has a story, I believe, in science. But sometimes the bigger picture gets lost because we're so focused on getting the tiny sort of detail exactly right. And you know, teachers need to be proving, okay, my students have had this kind of increase on these tests. But they're not actually helping students to retain knowledge. They're allowing students to memorize and then forget. And I think the way we internalize knowledge is we experience that. I think, you know, the things that have had the most impact for me and probably for most of us in life are the stories we've lived. So when we've done something, we've had an experience, we remember it. So when I go to Minuteman National Park with my boys and we talk about the American Revolution and we're looking at it, I think that's a much more powerful way to learn than sitting at a book and, you know, memorizing something out of a textbook for a test, which will then, you know, in a week or a month or a year be totally forgotten. And I know we can't always be going, you know, on field trips all the time, but I think there are ways to make learning more active, more experiential, and helping students understand the scope, the bigger picture, the story that's being told. It helps us to remember. It helps us to feel like we're a part of something. And there's a lot of work to be done to make that story better. But I feel like that helps students to retain a little bit better than sort of these, you know, almost slice them and dice them and get these little pieces of information and prove that we're learning and then kind of forget them and move on. So I sometimes hear, like you're saying, hear people talk about dates or times and think, how do we not pick this up? But I sometimes wonder if just a more narrative form of education that, you know, we all love stories. Like my oldest, especially before bed, will never go to bed until I tell him a story. And it's just that our minds think in stories, and we like creating stories. That I think if we think of education as more of a story, what story are we telling about success? What story are we telling about what matters? Then I think our kids will invest more in it and be more excited.
Well, I think, you know, more excited. I learned history through books. I mean, whether it was To Kill a Mockingbird or for example, the Civil War. For me, it was Louisa May Alcott and Little Women. And I think if you read that book, you will never forget the Civil War. You'll never forget the time period and what it was like you know, how somebody could get diphtheria and die, you know. And so I just think the more we encourage children to read, and whether it's you know, any type of the old novels where set in a different time periods, you learn from it. And of course, and Jules Verne is just reading Jules Verne, you learn so much about history. So I think it's wonderful, and I think that your book, I hope Looney Tunes, really catches on. Looney Tunes, oh my God. Oh boy. Looney Experiment. Yeah, I'm going to say Looney Tunes. Oh boy. I'm going to save that for my blooper thing, Looney Tunes. Now, Looney Experiment, and your teacher, Mr. Looney, who really touched your heart, and I made a big difference in your life. This is so important, and I know that you edited a book called Imagine It Better, which is the visions of what schools might be. So was this a great project for you?
Yeah, that just felt like such a fun project. I always, whenever I feel like come up against a question or a problem, I love trying to build an anthology, or I'm a big fan of asking people what they think. And so with that book, there are a number of writers in the field of education who I really admire, teachers and writers and researchers. And I know and I can see on the faces that the way public school education is moving is not inspiring students. But I mean, I think there are people there are pockets that are doing it, but I think as a system, where it's not necessarily working great for all of our students. And so that book was a chance to say to people I really admired and thinkers and passionate teachers, what do you think? If you had any resources, any amount of ability to change the system, what would you do? And so not a negative thing of, you know, point out all the things that are wrong, but create something new. Tell a story about what you would do, what school would be like. And so that book was a chance to hear from, you know, a dozen and more educators and hear their ideas and their visions for what school could be like. And it was very inspiring to me to read, and it was really fun to help put that together.
And what were some of the most interesting suggestions?
Wow. there were so many. That's a great question. There are so many good ones. One of my favorites was by an author named Sam Bennett, who just does really incredible work with teachers and students. And she, in her essay, it's the last essay in the book, she goes through and she, you know, includes all the emails that she sent with teachers and the work she did with students. And she includes lots of primary source material, but she basically walks through these student speeches that students give and how an entire school system, starting with the teacher and a teaching coach who works with the teacher, they created this unit where students were going to give speeches and they were going to actually perform them in public. And then it led to connecting with the principal, and then the whole school community knew about it. And it was this way of creating a lesson that reached way beyond the classroom. And she kind of broke it down of how it was done and how, again, when we're talking about writing with revision, how it was revised, the lesson plan and the execution of it, but that it had to be revised, and it was through people communicating in positive ways. Because I think sometimes we think of revision and we think someone's going to rip this apart, or we think revision has to be mean and bad, but that it can be really positive and empowering. Like, you know, instead of saying no, this, we say yes and this. So I like this idea. Let's add this to it. It's sort of the idea of building, like you build a fire by adding twigs and then medium-sized logs and then big logs, but the idea of growing it so it's bigger rather than subtracting. And I think sometimes in education especially, we get so caught up with let's pinpoint, let's criticize, let's subtract everything and find all the flaws. But instead, I think we could start from a more fire-building approach. Let's do that, and let's try this, and what about this, and what if we had, you know, 10 students to a class rather than 20, and the money is there. We could find ways to do it. And so it's sort of thinking in terms of what's possible. So that was a great essay. And then there was another great essay by Marilyn Cochran Smith and Rebecca Stern, two authors I really admire, who talk about education, and they talk about, hey, what if teachers were expected to be less certain of everything? We sometimes expect teachers to, you know, you need to be certain this is what you think, this is exactly what you're going to do. But what if we looked at teaching more as teachers bring to the table questions, and they wonder, and they say, what if we tried this differently, and what would happen if I did this with this student? And so teachers as more inquirers and thinkers, and really expanding their mindsets rather than a closed mindset. You have to know exactly what to do all the time, and this is the right strategy, but thinking a little,
you know, I would like to tell everyone to go to your webpage. Now your webpage is Luke W. Reynolds.
Yes.
And you have to put the W in there because there's another Luke Reynolds who's doing something a little bit different. you're LukeWReynolds.com, and it's a great webpage. I really like it. It tells about all the different books you have, and there's a link there to your blog, which is called Intersections, and I very nicely written and very interesting. I wish I had more time to talk to you about the Walden Pond, because I have some interesting stories about Walden Pond. I want to thank you so much. It's been a joy to talk to you. And the book is Looney Experiment, and I'm the one who's Looney Tunes half the time. But I think you're marvelous. I think your book is great, and I really look forward to the release date. And I hope I get to be the one to put the first review on. And I will give it 5 stars, that's for sure, because I think it's a book that everyone should read.
You're very kind, Patsy. It's been delightful talking to you, and thank you so much.
Okay, all the best to you. And and as I would say in the olden days, and I might start telling everybody now, peace, love, and happiness. Okay, thanks, Luke. Bye-bye now.
Thanks, Patsy. Bye-bye.
Hi. Okay, I'm back here. This is Patsy with a Z, and I want to wish everyone a great week. I really enjoyed talking to Luke Reynolds. I hope that you will pre-order his book on Amazon. It's a great read and something that you should give to any teenager you know. It is inspiring. So remember, one of the joys of life is to see your own words on paper or hear them spoken on stage or screen. So think seriously about writing your own book. And there is a book in all of us, I think. So join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it. Have a great week.